Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello, and welcome to the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nurton, the Marx editor. This is the second episode in which we're talking about brand valuation with Bill Budd and Sergio Elman of the Marx IAM team. Bill is Group Legal and IP Director at Virgin Group, and Sergio is a partner of Marval O'Farrell y Malal in Argentina. If you haven't already done so, I really recommend listening to the first episode, which is episode 26 of Talking Marx, before starting this one. In this episode, we'll be picking up on some of the topics introduced in the previous one, and looking in particular at valuation standards, some case studies, and finally, some advice for brand owners. So, Sergio, in the first episode, we briefly discussed accounting standards. Can you tell us anything about other standards that are relevant to brand valuation?
The additional standards are actually not accounting standards by the rule, but they are issued by the International Standards Organization, those known as ISOs. And there you have two applicable standards, and I will give you dates which also show how new all of this discussion is. The first standard is 2010, so that is the first standard issued, the number 10668. And it focuses on the valuation of brands. And the second standard is 2019. So it's just pre-pandemic. That is standard 2671, 20,671. And that is what Bill has mentioned as brand evaluation. So both come in together as all of the ISOs, all of the international standard organization standards are, you know, keep your office tidy and do it this way. It's procedural. You can do it for a service. You can do it for a product. You can do it for any number of issues. The quality of a product can be standardized by this organization. And as such, then, the quality of valuation is being provided with this standard or these two standards, which can be used together, of course, as a good rule of thumb of how to work around the different issues. So both standards are relevant, both standards are new, and in both cases, they have actually evolved and are being revised probably as we speak. And for instance, there has been 2021 and 2022 amendments to these standards. They also address patents, not only brands, geographical indications. So this is, I think, a very interesting tool. And that is where probably the world could be looking at for the purpose of continuing to improve on these standards. You will not get rid of the hurdles. The hurdles are part of the problem and they're there to stay. I mean, it's not like someone will write something and everything will suddenly become perfect. That will not happen. Mm-hmm. But of course, as you study these issues and you realize the importance they may have for companies, then improvement of these standards, trying to actually define certain more minute aspects of valuation are very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, as you say, how those have evolved. Mm-hmm. I mean, what can you just briefly explain why the ISO, you know, looked into these this topic for standards and, you know, where did the push for that come from? Was it from brand owners or?
Well, brand owners may have taken, yes, their bid, but obviously there was a need within the companies before that. Organizations, brand owner organizations started looking at this probably as from 2015, 2018. So this became more visible, I would say, in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the 2019 standard came more or less at the same time. So I cannot really say that organizations such as ours were actually the initial push, but it seems that the world was coming together in the thought that this was a relevant issue to have to tackle, basically. And both the ISO standard boards and the organizations were looking at the problem and trying to have it resolved. So there was a little bit of interaction between organizations and the ISO board to try to, and even businesses, as data became available also worldwide, businesses were created from being able to actually do this in more of an automatic fashion. This couldn't be done, say, 20 years ago. So 10 years ago, definitely some specialized platforms became available to companies in order to do quick valuations or improve their valuation systems. And as this happened, everybody sort of rushed to have an improvement in the standards and in the processes because suddenly it became more pervasive that people could do this. So I would say, and Bill, I would ask you, how do you see big companies, small companies in this? Because in my view, small companies are simply not aware that they can do all of this. Big companies normally are aware, even if they don't do it regularly. But the big, big gap to jump here is more with the medium and small size companies rather than with the large companies.
I would say that's probably right. And perhaps the sorts of issues that are perhaps more at smaller companies' consciousness are those on the softer side here, on the evaluation side rather than the financial valuation side. They're perhaps less likely to be involved in M&A transactions or transactions on the stock exchange where a value has to be put on a brand, and perhaps more entwined with trying to understand what their value of the brand is to consumers and how the health of the brand is going. So most companies will do some work in respect of that evaluation question to a degree. It might be as simple as understanding what your NPS is, your net promoter score, and effectively that is a simple measure of whether or not a product or a service would be recommended by someone who's using it to somebody else. And that's what an NPS is. So that is a very rudimentary but quite useful form of a brand evaluation. The much more sophisticated companies and the bigger brands will likely have a much more evolved way of understanding that and measuring that in-house over time. So they might well have an insight team who look at the brand health in the different markets and their ability to sort of understand what's really going on in relation to those brands. But I think almost all companies who care about their brands and their consumers will want to have a read on how that's working in their target market.
And Sergio, what are the benefits for a company, for a brand, of understanding and, I guess, recognizing the ISO standards? I mean, would I want to do that?
Well, James, this is a bit... recognize the ISO standards obviously gives you a global perspective of... being able to immediately say that you're complying with a standard. That's the actual benefit of using any standard. So they quickly, it's like talking the same language.
Yep.
I mean, you go to your counterpart, whatever business you're trying to conduct, and if you're going to a bank or you're going to a financial officer, or if you're in litigation and you go to the court, if you're complying with a sort of objective standard, which is worldwide recognized, obviously, at least that part of the issue is not a discussion at all.
Mm-hmm.
So the benefit there is pretty big to be able to talk the same language. Otherwise, it becomes more subjective.
Mm.
This idea of narrowing down the uncertainty happens to a lesser extent. So you actually need to use these standards to try to keep on narrowing the uncertainties of valuation and evaluation in general. I think that's basically the best answer for using those standards always.
And as the standards become more widely recognized, more widely accepted, I suppose that will increase. More investors, more stakeholders will see the benefit of complying with the standards.
Absolutely. There is perhaps one issue that comes to mind now. Perhaps it's sort of off the specific subject we're dealing with, but you might want to say something regarding the following. There is a fiscal issue, sort of a tax issue, going around the whole subject, and basically that differs from country to country, because or from company to company, of course. Normally, people are not very keen in showing they're very, very valuable to the world all the time. So that's a very big if that has been actually hidden from our discussion here, because we don't even want to voice it. But that's a pretty obvious thing. I mean, you keep your money in your pocket and you don't go showing around with a stash of money like this. So You don't want tax authorities to come after that or try to. And in fact, for instance, Argentina has a small 0.5% tax on capital assets of companies. Only very few countries have that. Mm-hmm. So that's not a global problem, but it is a pointed problem. And also you will have the situation where you have tax imposed on gains, on capital gains. If you suddenly revaluate your brand from, say, 1,000 to 1 million, and suddenly, you know, where did that money come from? So basically you have a very big tax problem on people not actually wanting to say all the time that they have this value. Again, there is a relative solution to that, which is, since you cannot put this on your balance sheet, tax authorities are very unlikely to be able to get a hold of that money. Mm-hmm. But you can always make a note to the financial sort of records of your annual report. You can keep these key point indicators over time being revealed to the equity holders, to the stakeholders, shareholders. So this is a way to get around this thing of, you know, not showing your stash of money to the tax authorities.
Interesting point. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Let's move on. Bill, given everything we've talked about, you know, obviously there are pros and cons to valuing and evaluating your brands. What are the sort of practical steps that companies can take to manage, and if they want to value their brands and IP portfolios?
Well, I think there's lots of good reasons and really fairly basic reasons to have a handle on this as someone who's sitting over decisions about whether to invest or not in trademarks and brands generally. I mean, fundamentally, most companies want to make sure they're spending their money and allocating their resources wisely. So they want to know that if you are going to do a new filing program or going to invest in some patents or going to try and reach into a new market and invest behind a brand, that it's worth doing so. And at that level, at least, understanding that your brand has a value and that value justifies the level of investment is an important thing, I think, to be able to do. That is a fairly basic thing, but it's just worth touching on, I think, and not sort of going past. And then I think that the sort of the level beyond that, you really get into what the nature of your business is. And at Virgin, where I work, quite a significant portion of our business relates to income that we derive from third parties who use our brand. So we have quite a sort of established licensing program. And we look at the health of that licensing program in a number of different ways, including the performance of the companies and the sort of the ultimate customer experience, all those sorts of things. But we also look at the revenues generated under the brand for both our partners and ourselves. And so we have a consistent handle on how that that branded business is doing it, and we've had that for many years, and that's part of dealing with the questions that we got into a little earlier around what happens when, you know, something comes in from outer space and causes an issue in the press, or, you know, something goes wrong with an aeroplane that's one of our branded aeroplanes, or there's something that goes wrong, and what does that mean for us as a whole and our other licensing partners? Does everybody get stuck with that, or actually is that something that's survivable? And so having a bedrock of data that understands that and can help you interpret those sorts of things is worthwhile.
And I guess the more data you have and the greater the time span and so on, the more useful that is.
I think that's right. All these things with reason, of course. Yes. You know, there's a limited amount of time and resource to do everything. You certainly need enough to have a handle on it, but there's not always a great amount of luxury to be spent on doing such things.
Yeah. But again it will depend, I suppose, the role of the brand in the company as well. If you have one big brand, if it's widely licensed, that may be different to if you're a company that has a portfolio of thousands of different brands. Good. There's one other thing, Bill, about any other developing standards. I think you've mentioned before the marketing standard, which may be relevant and useful. Can you just say a little bit more about that?
So this is connected with what Sergio said about the ISO standards. And And it's interesting, the valuation ISO standard came out in 2010, but it took them another 9 years to get the e-valuation standard out in 2019. And I suspect there's a reason for that, which is that circumstances forced the articulation of the financial methodology in 2010. There was probably a lot of data to go on. It was being driven by accountants and tax authorities who wanted to know the answers to these questions. But the art of brand evaluation perhaps took a little bit longer to understand and contextualize, and that's why I think it's taken a bit longer to get that out there. But it has its value, and it is, I think, the only example of a sort of quite well understood and well received international attempt to articulate what the sort of the respectable methodologies for looking at evaluating a brand are. It's the only example I can think of. I'm not really aware of any others.
Yeah. And is it something that you use on a sort of day-to-day basis?
I wouldn't say that we there's a sort of well-thumbed copy of the ISO standard on my desk, but I think the principles from it can be quite useful. I think, like all sort of useful studies, it's based in quite a lot of market research and understanding of what happens in practice. So there are, you know, brand agencies around the world who want to understand what's going on with individual brands, what drives a brand forward, what holds it back, and that sort of science and that understanding has fed into the ISO standards. There can also be unusual circumstances where that intel is of great use. We had a dispute a couple of years ago with an American investment fund. And at the center of the dispute was a question about whether our brand had been sufficiently damaged to allow them to exit a license agreement. And that it was clear from the context that that was not a financial question about the value of the brand financially. It was more to do with brand health. And the contract in question had no clear contractual test for how to assess brand health. So we were left with the question, and the court was left with the question about how to look at that framework and understand what was going on with the health of the Virgin brand and whether what had happened was sufficiently serious to allow them to exit the agreement. And there was quite a lot at stake, not just our brand reputation, but there was an awful lot of money. More than $100 million was at the center of the dispute. So it was a serious question. And in that context, having rigorous experts in court who understood brand health methodologies and having something like the ISO standard out there as a sort of benchmark was very helpful for the judge in reaching what was ultimately the right conclusion.
Interesting. Okay. I'm glad you got what you think was the right conclusion.
So we.
Good. Okay. And Sergio, are there any examples that you can share of companies or projects where brand valuation was, well, valuation or evaluation was particularly important, whether that was in a deal or a fundraising or perhaps facilitating a licensing agreement or something?
Yeah, there are several. And one which I liked, there are obviously global examples, and I have a couple of Argentine examples, which obviously will not be well known. And in fact, they were not published. So I will talk about those in a minute. One of the initial interesting sort of asset-based deals was done by the pop singer David Bowie. And he securitized his future royalty cash flows to get back his recording rights from whoever was his producer at that time. And that was backed by a broker and by Prudential, one of the sort of financial banks in New York. And he actually managed to raise $55 million in 1997. So that is one of the sort of well-known and kind of nice things where someone who had no control over his business at that time because somebody else had the stream of royalties. Of course, he was getting his part of the royalties, but he wasn't happy with and wanted to change sort of his producers. So he had to get those rights back and had to pay for them. So banks actually used the future royalties on his intellectual property to be able to buy back his rights. So that's very interesting.
They were the Bowie bonds, weren't they?
The Bowie bonds, yes. Bowie bonds, correct. And then you have several examples. Kodak, for instance, basically bailed out in 2012 by selling a lot of the patents. This is patents, not trademarks, but the same kind of concept would apply to people like Apple, Google, and Microsoft, who actually bought the remains of Kodak. Because of obviously the digital imaging wasn't working anymore for them. Then, more recently, you have a British fashion brand designer, Jaeger. In 2017, they sold to Edinburgh Woolen Mill pre-insolvency. And this is interesting because we had a similar case after the big Argentine crash in 2001. With the main shoe or sneaker manufacturer, a sports shoe manufacturer in Argentina called Alpargatas, and they were like an 80 or 100-year-old company already, very well-known brand. Even one of their initial goods called Alpargatas became generic. So over time, it's a very sort of low-cost shoe. But basically, they're a very sizable business, and they cracked in 2001 together with Argentina. And a similar bailout to this Jaeger fashion company happened because they actually did two restructurings by creating trusts with the trademarks. The first trust, the beneficiary was actually the company, so the company could continue using their trademark based on that trust. But basically, the court allowed, because there was a court intervening already, allowed to get the trademarks into a different and separate group of assets, which would not be jeopardized by the eventual financial issues that the company was having. So first they did that. They were allowed to use the mark. And then with the financial royalties, Bowie Bonds kind of style, they securitized those flow of royalties in a second trust. And with that, they raised the banks raised the money to actually get the business going again. So it was like a double trust. First, get the marks out of the company, then use the financial streams to get a second sort of trust so that you can securitize and go to the market and actually issue trustworthy sort of bonds or obligations from the company that people thought they could now comply. So I think that's a very interesting sort of image of how complicated it can get and how important trademarks can be and sort of valuing these assets can be.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose in today's world, as we often say, trademarks, brands are some of the most valuable things, assets a company can own, in a global market and in a market where people are very driven by brands and by recognition and by influencers and advertising and so on. It's appropriate that should be recognized.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good. Okay. Well, I think we're coming towards the end of the time we have. So just a couple more questions. One for you, Bill. If any brand owners out there want to explore valuation of their brand, you've obviously got some experience in this area. What tips would you give them?
Well, I would say go in with an open mind. Be aware that it is as much art as science. I think if this podcast has demonstrated nothing else, it's that. So with that context, I guess asking the question about what is the value of my brand can lead to quite an interesting and potentially quite a complicated discussion. There can be a lot of data, but sometimes no clear answer to the question. So be really clear about why you're asking the question. It may have unintended consequences. We touched on that, topic earlier, I think, where we started to think about a value of a brand and not wanting to be too public about that. You don't want to put a target on the back of the company you're working for. So what is the purpose of it? And what are you going to do with the data and the output? And then finally, keep your eyes open. And this is perhaps even more important when you're looking at brand evaluation as opposed to brand valuation. But when you're getting into the evaluation of the brand question, there are an awful lot of people out there who are self-appointed brand experts. There are an awful lot of surveys out there that give you the top 100 performing brands in Asia or, 50 top hotel brands in the US. The methodologies behind those sorts of surveys are gloriously unscientific in many cases. And so you need to really understand whether you're dealing with a snake oil merchant or whether you're getting credible data that is rigorous and will stand the test of time or not.
Right, yeah. So you really need to look at perhaps the methodologies behind each of these and assess, you know, whether they're relevant and reliable for your purposes.
I think so. And it may be a question of if you truly want to understand how your brand is doing in those softer terms, that the brand evaluation question, it may be a case of working with brand agencies who know the market well, or even insourcing your own expertise. So you have a sort of customer experience insight or a brand insight outfit internally. You can ask those questions on a consistent basis over many years to start to build up the data that you've got.
Yeah. Sergio, anything to add finally from your point of view?
Not really. I think a lot had been covered, perhaps not in the detail of having to do evaluation, but for the reasons we've mentioned, it would not be useful to actually go into financial formulas or trying to actually get a right number into this. Generally speaking, I think that companies should be made aware that they could do a better job at keeping tabs of this without running big risks, and being able to benefit in different scenarios without having to wait for the scenario to actually arrive. And as automation and artificial intelligence is getting hold of all of our jobs generally, this will become easier. So it will become easier and less expensive to do. So the big, I would say, recommendation here for companies is to take advantage of this kind of new world and new technology that is being is evolving on our desks and on our daily jobs, to be able to do this in a very inexpensive and reasonable fashion in order to have the information at the tip of your fingers when you actually need it.
Great. Well, thank you very much indeed to both of you. I should say, to find out more about the work of the IAM team, anyone listening to this can visit the team pages on the Marks website, where you can see details of all the team members, the recent publications, and so on. And I'm sure Bill, Sergio, other members of the team would be happy to talk to anyone who's interested in this topic and exploring it further. And of course, the team will be meeting at the Marks annual conference and the Marks Sprint meeting. And I'm sure this is an evolving topic. I'm sure there'll be further developments that you'll be sharing with us in due course. But for today, we're going to wrap up this podcast. So thank you very much to everyone for joining us. And thanks in particular to Bill and Sergio for taking part today. We will have another episode of Talking Marks available very soon. So do stay tuned. But for now, it's a goodbye from all of us.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Sergio. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Marks and James. And thank you to the audience for bearing with us. Bye-bye.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.